Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
And thank you, Dan, for bringing us in with that. Dan is not with us today, but Jimbo Stewart, ladies and gentlemen, from Jacksonville, Florida. The great and wonderful Jimbo Stewart is with
us. Super excited to be here.
We are so glad
to
have you.
We love him.
We love you, Jimbo. You're such a good part of the replant.
Jimbo, where were you born?
Shreveport, Louisiana.
Man, Shreveport, Louisiana.
You know, Jimbo, quick story.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Introduced me to some true Cajun food not long ago.
Yeah?
Yeah? What did we eat?
Well, that's a good question. What did we eat?
I don't remember, man.
It was when we were at New Orleans Baptist.
Oh,
what did we eat?
In New Orleans.
It was unbelievable.
Char-grilled oysters.
Oh, my gosh. Clifton, you ever had this?
I have not had char-grilled oysters.
Listen, I know you and I, we've probably said this before, you and I love the same kinds of food.
You're the least adventurous eaters.
We are the least. We know what we like, and it's meat and potatoes.
Listen, give me a cheeseburger.
That's right.
Give me some pizza.
That's right.
Jimbo actually makes fun of us about it,
yeah.
And rightly so.
Well, Halleck and I, if it's not an emoji,
if it's not an emoji, I'm not in.
We're not in.
But I was right about the char-grilled oysters.
No, you were. They were unbelievable,
look,
man.
Well, Jimbo is a chef, by the way.
Yes.
We could do a whole show
That's
on
right.
cooking right here.
He does it all.
And we might, because it might be better than the shows we're doing now. I don't know. I don't know. But here's what we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
We're going to talk about rural ministry. Rural. R-U-R-A-L.
Rural.
Rural. Out in the country, all right? Now, if you live in the city, go ahead and listen to this one anyway, because I'm telling you, it's going to be full of hilarity and great stuff, and you're going to be so glad you listened.
Oh,
maybe. Anyway, we're going to talk about really, this is some really important stuff. Again, it comes from our friend Jen Elf, and Jim got some great insight here, encouraging small town, couldn't just be rural, but maybe small town and rural pastors. And frankly, mm-hmm. of 40-some thousand, almost 50,000 Southern Baptist churches, the vast majority, guys, are in small towns and rural places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are more Southern Baptist churches than there are Starbucks, Subway, and McDonald's combined.
Combined.
Is that right?
Combined. Combined.
Hey, give us the number, too. So what size church are we talking here?
Oh, these are churches of well less than 100 people.
Yep.
And these are churches that are probably in communities of under 10,000.
Okay.
So that's a lot of guys we're listening to.
Yep.
And if you're in a large church in a big city, you're not listening to this podcast anyway, so don't worry about it. But
yeah, so 79% of Southern Baptist churches are under 100.
Yes, that's right.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. The median Southern Baptist church, just so we can confuse you with more numbers,
sure.
is 67. That means half of our churches have less than 67 in worship,
yeah.
and half have more.
And we love these guys.
We do.
Man.
So if you are one of those large church pastors who just was going up and down the dial on your podcast and you came to this one,
up and down
listen,
the dial.
Listen anyway. Do you do that on a podcast?
On the dial.
Listen,
what decade are we
listen,
in?
Listen anyway, because you can help other rural pastors, right?
Yes.
So this will help any rural pastor you have. These are three ways, just three. Count them three, not four, not five, but three ways.
We might land at five.
We
by
might
the time
land
we're done.
At five. But three ways you can encourage rural and small town pastors. Now, I just want you to know, I serve in a small town, Linwood, Kansas, 400 people, right?
Yep.
And it's a rural place. And I told you in another podcast, they text me every Sunday how many people were in attendance that day worship,
that's right.
whether I'm there or not. They have a full-time pastor named Howie, but I'm on the pastoral team, and so they text me. So here was our attendance in the last few weeks. Ready? I got these texts. April 14th, 62. April 21st, 71, and then we had 52, and then we had 60, and then we had 94.
That's a big one.
And then we had 98.
Come
wow.
on.
Wow. Two in a row.
We're going to have to add parking.
Oh, man, you bet.
We got to buy some more chairs. We have moved from 60
Start
to 90.
Starting to dream, baby.
In 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. We went from 60 to 98. Thank
it's
you.
Happening.
Huge.
And then the week after 98. We had 56.
Wow.
And then last Sunday, we had 44.
Oh.
Would anybody like to buy some chairs?
Boy, isn't that ministry, man?
It is ministry.
Yeah.
The mountaintop of the valley.
I know.
And especially in a smaller church.
I know.
That's
you go
just
from
reality.
98 to 44 in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but here's one thing I know about serving in a small town. And Linwood's 400 people, right? Church has been there since 1911. Change is harder in a small town and a rural place because small towns and rural places are more resistant to change than urban places because they experience so much less of it.
Mm.
Urban places are changing all the time, but that rural place, it's much slower to change. And some people choose to live in a small town or a rural place because they do not want to change.
Right. Yeah.
They like it the way it is. Yeah. Everything else in the world's changed. So you've just got to go in there and know that. You may have found yourself, Pastor, in a place that's very resistant to change. Mm. And you've got a couple of choices. You can try to blow the place up and make change anyway and feel like you're a hero, and then they fire you, and then you get a martyr complex because you tried to do the right thing. Mm. Or you can do what my brother Jim Eliff tells us to do here. Three ways you can find meaningful impact in a rural place. Number one, remember that you are entirely unaware of the true eternal impact of your ministry. Mm. Now, let me just explain what he's talking about. For instance, maybe you only have older adults. I hear that all the time. We don't have any young people in our church. We don't have any teenagers in our church. It's just a bunch of old people, a bunch of older adults, all right? Could be, but those older adults, they are grandparents. Mm. They are great-grandparents. They are great aunts and great uncles. They have neighbors. They have kids that they have relationships with. One of them perhaps may be a great-grandparent of an unconverted child. And maybe some stimulus, something you say in a Wednesday night Bible study or in a Sunday morning preaching moment, it may just stimulate that that grandparent in a way they're not even aware of, but they use that in some conversation to share that with their great-grandchild, and God and the Holy Spirit uses that to convert that great-grandchild. Yeah. You're not going to know that till you get to heaven. So you can't say that just preaching only to older adults is a waste of my time. Mm. It is absolutely not. And don't let Satan tell you that.
That's
and you
right.
have no idea the impact that your ministry is eventually going to have, even to a group of older adults. And again, they can have tremendous impact on their grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and you can have tremendous impact on them. So don't lose sight
That's
of that.
That's really good.
All right, number two, Mr. Halleck.
Okay, be happy to know that you may not be able to change much, but lives.
Right.
Okay.
But lives.
All right. What's that mean?
Well, listen, what do you think it means?
I think it means if you go to a rural church, I was in one a week or two ago, and I liked it a lot. I want to go back, actually. Yeah. I got to be careful. I'm even thinking maybe God want to call me to pastor one of these churches because they have a pastor now at Linwood, all right?
Yeah.
But it had up front, it had two large pictures of Jesus, you know, mm-hmm. on
yep.
either side
oh,
of
yeah.
the platform. I'm not particularly comfortable with photographs.
Yeah.
I would like to see a photograph. That would be really cool. I'm not personally particularly comfortable with artists' sort of drawings of what Jesus might have looked like, right?
Right.
Behind the pulpit, two of them. It's like, okay. But you know, those pictures have probably been there for decades.
Yeah.
They mean
mm-hmm.
something to those mm-hmm. people. If I became a pastor there when I was younger, here's a true story.
Yeah, yeah.
First church I ever went to was Alta Vista Baptist Church in Weatherby, Missouri, all right? And Weatherby is a town of 90 people. The church was outside of town, all right? We weren't even in town.
Wow.
We were out in the country. And it was a white frame church. And my first Sunday there, behind the pulpit, was a black velvet painting of the Last Supper. Black velvet, like you would get at a truck stop, right?
Black velvet.
And all I could think of when I saw the black velvet painting of the Last Supper was that black velvet painting of the dogs playing poker. You remember that? Have you seen that? Google it. There's a black velvet painting of dogs playing poker. And so there's this black velvet painting of the Lord's Supper. And it was on a tapestry. It wasn't even framed. It was hanging up there. And I thought, that's the most tacky-looking thing I have ever seen in my life, right? And so I'm 18 years old. I'm a freshman in college. It's my first church. And so, man, the second week I'm up there, I'm taking that thing down, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, man. I mean, it got bad really quick.
Real fast.
Really quick. And it went right back up. And as far as I know, it's still there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 50 years ago. There's a whole lot of reasons for that. But the point is, in a rural setting, things that you might think are no big deal, but they won't even let me take that picture down. They won't let me change this on the platform.
Yeah.
They won't. We can't change we got to sing out of the hymnal, the red back hymnal and the black hymnal. We got to have deacons. We'll never have elders. We got to have monthly business meetings. We'll never go to quarterly business meetings. It could go on and on and on. There's all kinds of things in a rural church that they have made really important, and obviously more important than they ought to be, and that's a whole other podcast for another day. But here's what we're trying to get around. If you only focus on what they won't let you change, are you ready? Here it is. You will not change what they will let you change.
Yeah. Mm.
And so what my brother Jim Eliff is saying is quit focusing on the fact you can't take the silk or the black velvet painting down,
yeah,
but rather focus on the fact that you still can change lives.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Listen, he says this. He says, I'm not saying you should not try to lead change when it's appropriate.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, the real purpose of your being there is to change lives, not to make things look good.
Right.
And why why did I want to take that black velvet painting of the Lord's Supper down? Because I thought it made the church look tacky. And if I had any of my friends from college come there to see me preach, I didn't want them seeing that. Right. Yeah. I mean, it was more important to make the church look good than to realize my job is to change lives in that church.
That's so good.
And if I can focus all of my energy and attention on changing lives, then I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. So, you know, look at it as an upside if you can't change everything, because you can still change lives.
Well, and Jibble, you had a good insight on this.
Well, so I talk to guys all across the country, and sometimes they'll say, you know, I hear all these things about revitalization. I hear this and that, but I don't have the time, man. I'm bivocational. I'm a small rural church. How am I going to do any of this? And one of the things I always try to say is, no matter where you are, no matter what your resources, no matter what's going on, you can change one life at a time. Mm. You can disciple one person. You can, and then you can earn the trust eventually to change one thing at a time. And just trust that, the pace of change is going to be slower in a rural church than it is in an urban church, most likely. But you can change one life.
Yes.
And then you can lead that life to change one life. And it always goes back to the way you define success and Replant, Clifton, of making disciples that make disciples that make the community noticeably better. That may be a slower process, but one at a time, you can change people's lives and see what God might do with just a little bit.
That's a good
word. I've often wondered, what if I became so passionate about seeing people's lives changed as I was passionate about trying to change the logo or the website or the order of worship or the songs we sang? I mean, I could be pretty passionate about wanting to change all those things, even the looks of the building on the inside, the signage on the outside. I can get really wrapped up and we need to change those things, and I can pretty much ignore the fact that my main job there is to see lives changed.
That's exactly
right. So, man, thank you, Jim Ella, for pointing that out. So, number one, remember, the impact of your ministry will not be known till you get to heaven. None of it's wasted. Number two, if they don't let you change anything else, you can still change lives, and at the end of the day, that's what you're called to do. And number three, be energized by the concept that your church could become the most loving church, I like this, in the world.
I love it.
I mean, Brother Jim's not talking small time here. Not the most loving church in the county, but in the whole galaxy. I mean, the universe. You could be the most loving.
Swing big, baby.
I had a friend of mine, church planter, when he was planting out of our church in Kansas City, and he named his church Church of Faith International. And it was him and his wife and a few other people. And my worship leader said, Anthony, why don't you just call it Church of Faith Galactic while you're at it? Anyway, hey, as 12 years ago, he's still going. So that's good awesome. For Anthony. It's still out there. It's still Church of Faith International.
Can I read? Let me read this from Jim. This is so good. He says, there will be many things your church may not be. It may not be the most educated church or the most innovative church or the most evangelistic church, but it can be the most loving church. There's nothing to stop that from happening except your lack of determination and or the will of the people. And then he says, love, after all, is the sign, and this is true.
It is.
Of maturity as a church.
That's right.
Now, if you are seeing this, you will always find ways to encourage.
You know, I've been watching some videos, YouTube videos, on the Independent Baptist Bible Fellowship. And, you know, I got a lot of friends in Independent Baptist Fellowship, a big college in Springfield, but they've had a lot of problems. I'm nothing new there. They were among the most evangelistic back in the 60s and 70s. Believe me, they had numbers that would blow you away, but they also had some challenges by their own admission with being loving and compassionate. Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, we're not known to be a church by how evangelistic we are. Yeah. We're known by how much we love one another and how much we love the world. That's what the Lord said.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And you can be evangelistic and be spiteful and hateful and angry and everything else. Yep. I mean, I've seen it in my life. And I just think we look at this and we say, there's nothing to stop a real church from just becoming even more loving, not just of themselves, obviously, but of their community and of the world and of people who need help, and just becoming that wonderful, loving community.
Amen.
They'll do that. And here's what we do know. If you focus on these things, these three things, if you focus on remembering that you, well, your work will only be known throughout eternity, remembering that nothing of it's wasted. Secondly, if you focus on changing lives, not necessarily changing the decor of the building and stuff like that. And thirdly, if you focus on making that a loving church. Fourthly, they will follow your leadership and change, right? Mm. Talk about that, Jimbo.
Yeah, over time you can earn that trust. But one thing I wanted you to say before that on the idea of loving, you'd said it, not just loving to each other and to yourselves. Mark, every dying church I have ever gone in to consult.
They love each other. They love themselves.
They love each other, yeah, right? And here's what will happen. Almost every single time, I'll be having a conversation with that leadership team or pastor search team or something, and eventually one of them is going to say, hey, but Jimbo, I've got good news. Mm-hmm. We've got something really unique going on that you need to understand. This is a real value that we've got. And the first couple of times I heard this, I was excited. Like, what is this going to be?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now I could finish the sentence for them. Here's what they're going to say to me. We're the friendliest church you've ever been to.
Sure.
Every single one of them. Every single one of them are the friendliest. As a matter of fact, the church I replanted said that. They're the friendliest church. Yes. But here's the thing. Over time, I realized they're not that friendly.
They're not that friendly.
They're friendly to each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
they're
yeah.
not necessarily known in the community
wow.
as yeah. being a friendly and loving place. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to pass over this too quickly on this idea of being the most loving church, because I think sometimes we jump too quickly to that, like, we're the friendliest in church in town mentality, and we go, yeah, we got that one nailed. We are a loving right. church because we love each other.
And it's been very well said. Many times people have said it. People are not looking for a friendly church. They're looking for friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference.
Yeah.
Friendly means we're just friendly to each other. Mm-hmm. But when they say they're looking for friends, are you trying to become friends to the people who don't come to church, don't know who you are?
Yeah.
Don't even appreciate who you are.
Yeah. So when we say friendly, loving, make sure that's something that the community's experiencing,
yes.
and not just the people that are part of that
yes.
church as a clique.
Yes. Are you loving that community with ridiculous abandon? Here's what we say all the time, and you can say this to your congregation. In fact, you ought to say it every Sunday in some way or another. Those who've been dealt most generously with should be the most generous people in the community, and nobody's been dealt more generously with than those of us who've been redeemed.
Amen.
So out of that redemption, Amen. We need to be the most loving, generous people in our community.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping a real church from being like that.
Yeah.
And if you're like that, you will see people come to Christ. And mm-hmm. we're going to talk in another podcast here about how to attract folks to church, and it's not the way you think. In fact, let's do that one next, all right?
Okay.
So the very next one will be how to attract folks to come to church. And again, it's not what you think. Hope you've enjoyed this podcast on rural church planting, rural church ministry. What were you going to say, Mr. Jimbo? Go for it.
Well, I was just going to go into the building trust thing. If you'll do this well, you could actually eventually build up the pace of change faster because over time you're going to demonstrate that you love these people and you love this community more than you love the change that you're trying to do. Mm. And you'll see lives changed one at a time. And now you can actually start to lead the organization as a whole toward what it's been called
to be.
That
might be a decade. I mean,
yeah, we're talking a long runway.
We're not talking a week or two.
This is a long runway.
It's a long, long runway. But it will happen. I mean, I totally agree that if you do these kinds of things, eventually some in this church will begin to trust your leadership enough that they might let you move the black velvet painting to the side rather than right behind the pulpit.
Eventually, over time.
Over time.
Yeah. That, but don't jump to changing all those things.
No.
Focus on changing some lives, loving the community well, building trust.
That's right.
Hey, you know what I think people should do?
What?
I think they should follow or subscribe or whatever button.
Because I promise you, if you'll subscribe, this program will get better. If you don't subscribe, it's just going to keep getting worse, right?
Eventually, Dan will be back.
Eventually, Dan will be back.
And it'll be much better.
Yeah, that's right. But if you subscribe, we will do a better job. It will motivate us. And please, our future depends on this subscription list. And we need it desperately. Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.